Yeah, everyone who is coming is here.
Go ahead and call the meeting to order. I guess we need to, we running this the same way or?
Yes, it's a workshop.
Yeah. All right, so we need to do the Pledge of Allegiance then?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we need to do a roll call for a quorum.
Mr. Adams? Mr. Batzel?
Here.
Mr. Givney?
Here.
Mr. Greiner?
Here.
Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Kesselring? Mr. Shack?
Here.
Got a quorum?
Got a quorum.
All right, very good. And it says we need to read some agenda notes. I don't know if you have any agenda notes to read?
I do not.
Okay. All right, then I guess we'll get right to it. Pete, you gonna speak first or?
Yes, sir. This is a workshop to take you specifically through the future land use, the proposed future land use element to the comprehensive plan. As you know, we've been working on 2035 vision plan for a couple of years now. We are finalizing the future land use map and finalizing several of the elements. We'll bring those to you over the next couple of months and take them, have them adopted by City Council, hopefully. We want you to be critical as you read through them. You know, questions like, why is that in here? Or why isn't this in here? Or things that we're looking for. We'll go through the portions of the, or the element as we have it done in general, and go through the process that we've gone through and talk about what the next steps are as we go through the process also. And I don't have a mouse for some reason tonight, so. You know, as you know, we started with a vision with the leadership group and came up with a vision map and took the land use map that we had with 17 or so land use classifications, and we revised that to be a much smaller number of land use categories. So we came up with a proposed 2035 land use map and a plan to do neighborhood areas or smaller areas as we went around the city, and I'll show you the proposed areas. And then to come up with a zoning map and have special treatment for transportation corridors. 2035 vision plan, as it was proposed and adopted as a guide for future elements. And what we're looking for is kind of an inverted triangle. We start at the 35,000 foot level, we begin to come down, and to be consistent with each level that preceded the level that we're at. This is the land use map that we started with, and you have these packets in front of you too if you don't want to follow along in here. It's the land use map that we have today. One of the ways that we derived, and it's not the only way, is we collapsed the commercial uses, the industrial uses, some of the retail uses, and or land use districts, and we created a map, an interim map that we worked from, and then came up with the map that we have now and created the policies that are in front of you, the land use policies, based on this map, essentially. So within the future land use element, go through some of the element. We want to incorporate the strategies and the principles of the 2035 vision and promote a long-term implementation of the plan. We want to make sure that we're consistent with the overall vision as we go through, and that's in goal one, objective one. We want to keep the leadership group alive in some form as we move through, and we want to have their participation, and we want to make sure that they not only monitor us, but they're still the champions of the plan as we go through. And they still appear before council and advocate for the plan. It's not staff's plan. It's the people's plan, and the leadership group is the group who would be the conduit between citizens and staff and citizens and council. Through community involvement, we identify the neighborhoods and prepare specific area plans as we go through. We have identified, I think, 9 specific areas that we'll get to, I think, in a slide on here. But we did the West Ocala plan, as you know. And what it does is each one of those plans will become a finer grain plan, more specific plan for treatments, for physical treatments in specific corridors, and for refinement of land uses and zonings. We'll identify areas as we go through each one of those by involving a steering committee or a smaller leadership group involved in the planning of each one of those groups or each one of those areas. And what we foresee coming from that is capital improvements plans and capital improvements elements that are directly related to the needs that we find based on the community plans and prioritized accordingly. And so we will evaluate those on a regular basis and make sure that the capital improvements element is consistent with the plan that we have. This is a more physical plan. It's intended to implement more physical documents like form-based codes and pays more attention to the built environment as opposed to being a Euclidean tool. It's more it's a set of more prescriptive tools. And so the utilization of, in Objective 4, utilization of things like form-based codes and amended land development codes that encourage a different style of development and attention to things like the gateways into the city or into specific areas of the city, like the gateways into the downtown, the gateways into specific parts of West Ocala that we deem kind of central to the West Ocala plan, are more important. And really, we should, every time that we look at a proposed improvement, we should make sure that it's consistent with the 2035 vision plan and ensure that we have consistency throughout. In Objective 5, we want to promote diverse mixed-use centers. The orange on the land use map, and I'll get back to the orange and the red, but we want neighborhoods that are more walkable, especially in the more urban areas or in areas that are available for urban-type development. And typically, those are, you know, on this map, the core area, the core hub, and also the orange areas. Some of those are greenfield development opportunities, and some of them are redevelopment opportunities. But some transformation of some of our suburban type development, we would make recommendations that it become more urban, not all of it, and that's why we added the low intensity land use to recognize that we do have areas that where we have more automobile oriented development, but where we can encourage and get more urban type development, we want to make sure that we utilize the practices that will allow us to end up with truly urban development. Objective 6 gets into the specific zoning or land use districts, starting with the central core. This is the most intense, it's intended to be the most intensely developed portion of the city, with high intensity development as shown on the 2035 vision. Densities and intensities that are buildings that are between 1 and 8 stories. Most of it will be regulated by form-based code. We want compact urban walkable form, sidewalks, and differentiation dependent upon the area that it's in. Like the urban core will typically have wider sidewalks, trees along the street. As we get outside of the most urban core. It may, the form of the sidewalks may change, but it's still important that we have provision for pedestrian access, and we want high densities and intensities typically between 12 and 60 units per acre before density bonuses through those areas. And like I said, a form-based with buildings closer to the street, not parking, not large parking lots between buildings and the streets. It should follow the historic urban building pattern. The orange on the map, the medium density, or medium intensity, I'm sorry, special districts. Previously, we'd called those medium high, and some of them were medium low, I believe. But this would be notched down. It's still, we're still concerned with the form. We would like relatively high intensity buildings that are 1 to 4 stories, typically regulated by a form-based code again. Minimum density is 5 units per acre and up to 30 units per acre allowed. Again, walkability and connectivity are important. And as we implement and create the zoning districts that go within these and some of the development regulations, we'll pay particular attention to the things that allow development of this intensity, and we're going to have to pay attention to things like community-based drainage, things like that. The low-intensity district, primarily automobile-oriented, this will have lower floor area ratios, lower intensities, lower densities. This is where the big box stores can still be developed, the drive-through banks and drive-through uses, the drive-through restaurants would typically be developed. And that's the yellow areas on the map. There may be form-based codes in some places or some kind of an overlay district, especially at the gateways. Look, in the gateways, I think that it will be very important to look at how we treat the public spaces, not just the private spaces, but how we enhance the public spaces in the gateways into the city. 3 units to 18 units per acre, and floor area ratios that are relatively low, from 0 to 0.5. And the development pattern would be more suburban in type. In the neighborhood district, the purple on the map, what we've begun to do just by creating the land use is to identify the neighborhoods as they exist now, the areas that are predominantly residential, and to preserve the character and make sure that they remain primarily residential in the character that they exist typically. Now, there may be some cases where we want to redevelop and we may introduce other uses if that's acceptable and consistent with the character that we want to create. But typically, we've got existing neighborhoods. We want to preserve the character and designate them with a residential zoning district that's consistent with the type of development that has been put on the map. For new residential development, it could be geographically dependent, but typically what we're going to want to see is block patterns that are more rectangular, typically more urban style development, shorter block lengths, development patterns that look more traditionally urban. We will allow limited office and retail uses, but again, character and scale will be important, and it'll be laid out in the development regulations that are created. Could be from 5 units to 12 units per gross acre with floor area ratios of about 0.25 as a maximum, or 0.25 as a maximum. And again, non-residential uses are going to need to be compatible and complementary to the surrounding areas and wouldn't be allowed on, at just any location. Typically, it would be at the higher order streets that run through neighborhood districts, not the local neighborhood streets. And there would be provision for some attached residential product in neighborhoods that are typically single family, but it would depend on several factors, and one of those would be things like lot size and lot width that would dictate whether we want to allow a multifamily, some kind of an attached single family product, not the apartment complex that you typically think of. The employment centers typically won't be subject to form-based codes. What we want to create is a vibrant hub for business, enterprise, research, development, employment activities. We'd hope to make it a regionally significant area, and attracting employers who put a lot of people to work would be the primary goal in these areas. It would typically be regulated by our land development code, not by a form-based code. Buildings that are 1 to 5 stories in height, horizontally mixed use, but typically, again, single site development, like in the low density or low intensity district. Some incentives, some allowance to build residential, and maybe some other ancillary uses that are commercial or office in nature that are strategically located. And then the public category. The public category is the recreation and parks and open space, intended for civic and public use. And we'll make sure that we go through and classify the parks and other uses that fit into that land use classification as we go. There's a table on page 14 with the densities, intensities, and the allowed uses. And again, objective 7 on page 15 is intended to promote quality urban design and development and redevelopment of automobile-oriented suburban corridors, the creation of corridor overlays for specific corridors that are laid out through there, specifically Pine and State Road 40. Objective 8, again, looking at the special districts, and we will, and identifying what the general intended use is for each one of those districts, and what type of activities would occur in those districts. Objective 9 is again, as I said, you know, the plan will be not just we won't use only the land development regulations to regulate development. We'd also use a form-based code. And form-based codes would be geographically specific to certain areas. Typically, those areas would be the most intense urban areas and the areas that we identify as areas that we want to see the most intense physical planning. And we're very concerned about what things look like as opposed to what goes into the buildings. And we lay out the specifics that would be included in the form-based codes. And then objective 10 is public health-related goals and policies that really encourage different types of different modes of transportation, be it pedestrian, bicycle, increased recreation opportunities, and other alternative transportation opportunities as we move through the planning process. We'll also add regulation. We'll have a historic preservation element. We're likely to add that to the future land use element as we go through. We have some draft historic preservation language. It was its own element, but we think that we would likely incorporate that into these, into the future land use element because it really is its own district, and it may be even that the historic districts come up with a unique zoning district. This was a workshop. As you know, it's important that we're consistent as we go through the process, the vision to the land use, to the adoption of the policies, to make sure that everything is coordinated and is consistent with one another. And we're getting into a very important portion of this as we move into the next year, creation of the zoning map and creation of the land development regulations and of at least the basis for the form-based codes. And so as we go through those, we want to make sure that we ensure consistency. We want to make sure that you get multiple looks at what we propose and that you have time to review it. Like I said, be critical of it. And it's going to be, I think, a relatively intense year in terms of the number of items that we give you as we move through the year, because we are trying to make sure that we get this implemented by the end of the zoning code implemented by the end of the year, and the zoning map, and that will come very quickly. So as I told you on the screens now are the proposed community areas. What we would plan to do is go through those probably on maybe a 6 to 12 month cycle. We may combine some of those areas and do a plan for like the North Historic and South Historic areas. We may do one plan for that area. We already have a downtown plan. We may go back to that, revisit it, and refine it. And we may combine several of the other areas. The other things, and you know, we also have going on at the same time, we've completed the West Ocala plan, but we also have the CRA projects going on at the same time. And they have, there again is a consistency issue with the CRA plans and what we lay as the base in our land use plan and zoning codes. And it's just an example of what would happen through the planning process with the area plans or the community plans. You can see there's a level of refinement here. We paid more attention to the things that the steering committee said were their priorities, treatments of the corridors, the locations of the hubs, so to speak, and connectivity within the district and to the downtown, which is important for all of the districts. And we'll go through, again, creation of the community area plans and policies for the community areas, and again, paying attention to consistency with the overall vision and the plan, and then create the zoning code and the form-based codes, or revise the zoning code and create the form-based codes and the areas that they pertain to. And the form-based code really just gives you a more predictable development pattern. It's more prescriptive. This is just an example of if you just had a zoning code that said this is a floor area ratio that you can have and the uses that you want in that building are allowed. You don't have any idea what the building necessarily is going to look like, or you know roughly where it may lay on the property, but it's going to be driven more by the other site infrastructure that the building needs. What are the setbacks? How much parking do I need? How much drainage do I need for my individual site? As we design it to the block level and then finally to the form-based and say, you have a build-to line as opposed to a setback. You can have these uses, and it has to have certain development characteristics when you build it. You get a more predictable form in the third. And so when we go to form-based coding, and there's a lot of groundwork and a short amount of time to set those up in, it'll be a stepped process. You'll likely see a couple of proposals on form-based coding as we go through the next year that lay the groundwork for the form-based codes that we implement. They're specific to the areas that we put them in place in. So if we put one in place downtown, it's likely to have prescriptive regulations that go down to the block and lot level, where a building goes on a specific site. And it would be a more physical and more of a picture plan as opposed to a policy-laden plan that says the building has to be 30 feet from, that it'll show the area that the building footprint could sit in, and where the parking can go, and those types of things. And it depends on the intensity and how urban the area is as to what that plan would look like. In the overlay districts, it may be a little less prescriptive, but may have some regulations for what development looks like as it interacts with the street, and what, you know, things like signage may look like in the overlay districts. And we'll open it for questions and comments and take you through the process. Like we said, this is a workshop. We will, on this it says that we'll go to Planning and Zoning Commission public hearing. That'll probably go to March. We will do a City Council workshop in February. And then City Council final adoption will happen either in March or April. And by the end of 2012, you can see we have a lot of work, a lot on our plates. The zoning ordinances, the form-based code. We also have a signage and wayfinding consultant on board. That's not the signs for specific businesses. That's more what will probably come out of that is specific wayfinding for points around the city. And what the other thing that comes out of that is probably branding for the city, some kind of a branding. They've worked, the group that we're using is called Merge, M-E-R-J-E. They've worked in a lot of cities around the country, Miami Beach, Dallas, Augusta, a few cities in North Carolina, some cities on the West Coast. I was pretty impressed with the signage packages, wayfinding, and branding that they've come up with in the cities that they've worked in, and they've been diverse. They tend to pick up the character that exists and that people want to exhibit to people who visit or people who are there all the time. So we look forward to that. And we have we'll create design guidelines. We are in the process of an economic study in West Ocala, another sub-consultant who's looking at siting of a grocery store in West Ocala, and then implementations in West Ocala and in the overall plan, and getting the things that we prioritize into the capital improvements element, capital improvement plans as we move forward. Questions, comments?
Do you want to take questions now, or other people will have anything to add to the presentation, or how do you want to do it from here? I mean, we can do it either way.
I think we'd really like to hear what you had to say and
what
you read in your packet
so far. Okay. Anybody got any questions then? Specifically or broad ranging?
If we have questions as far as like a basically the composition of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just went through and just kind of highlighted some of the inconsistencies just as far as how it's put together, written, those sorts of things. Presentation wise, I'd like to just submit that to you.
Okay, we can also meet individually. Anybody who wants to meet, any commissioner who wants to meet individually with us, we'd be glad to do that, but you could submit them to us too, and that's fine.
I mean, overall, I mean, I prefer what we're doing to, obviously, to what we have. So, I mean, I think it's a huge step in the right direction. It's something that we definitely need to do.
It's, yeah, and formatting and those kinds of issues, they're important to us, too.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it for you.
Okay.
And you can have it.
I was just going to say, I found out walking up here that, well, I've known for a number of days that our server's been spitting back emails, and I didn't even get this packet.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not the city's fault. It's our server's fault. And I just found it. Nate called it that my dog ate my homework excuse, but I haven't reviewed it. I'm excited to do it, and I'll just get with you, I guess, but I don't have much to
add. It won't take you long
to
review this, I don't think. You know, next time we're coming back with transportation and future land use?
Recreation.
Recreation and open space. Possibly what? On the 13th?
Well, I'm very, very glad we're moving to a form-based code, and this looks like a great start, but I don't have much to add. I guess I'll just follow up with you. Do you want me to follow up with you?
Sure, you can follow up with me, Mike, Lisa, anytime. And you can, you know, any written or anything that you want to drop with us,
no,
you can drop with us. That's fine.
Okay.
Just to clarify, I think we're not the whole city is not going to be in the form-based code. There's going to be portions of it that would fall under that, but there would be portions of it that would fall under conventional zoning, especially like the residential areas, but also some that would be like the State Road 240 corridors, they would fall under more of that low intensity. They may have some design guidelines, but it may not be a strict form-based.
Is it going to be enforced through just overlays, or?
Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but there's, I mean, we don't want it, the whole city is going to
form-based. Okay.
Not practical.
It's going to be, there's a little bit of magic to this that, you know, we haven't quite completely figured out yet, but. When.
Okay.
And again, it's kind of a, you know, it's an evolutionary process. We went over the next year's work program, I think, between us and the consultant. I think that the way that it's going to lay out is that staff will work. There, it won't be exclusive. Nothing's exclusive. But we'll work more on the conventional zoning classifications and district regulations and create kind of the base level of that. And then we'll have input from VHB also, and we'll bring it back to P&Z and to council, and we'll probably workshop it. On the form-based, VHB would carry the ball, and we'll have input back and forth. They'll bring it to us, and so that's kind of how it'll work out. How it gets implemented, it's kind of where the magic part is going to come into play. My thought is that everything will have a conventional zoning classification first. And then the specific areas, we know some of the specific areas where the form-based code will be implemented first. And so those would get a form-based application overlaid on them. I hedge to say overlay because I think it's more of a form-based code that applies to that area, and it won't be traditional zoning. But the idea is, again, like the land use map that's on the screen now, you know, we took that land use where we have 17 land uses and we compressed it to what we have. And the thought is, and we can argue over what the end number will be, is the 25?
30.
And I say 10 to 12. But, you know, the lower number, the better. But, you know, I think that we don't need R1, R1A, R1AA, R2, R3, RZL, RO, M1, M2, M3, M1 and M2, or the uses are considerably the same. B1, B1A, B2, B2A, B4. So some of it will be easy, but it does, you know, the closer we get to the bottom of the point, the more we start to truly affect people, and the more concern that I think that they're going to have about their property rights. And as we said from the beginning, the idea isn't to be more restrictive, it's to be, it's to give more options as we get into this. And I think that this land use, this future land use element's consistent with that. You can see that it's very broad. If you look at the table, it allows a lot of uses. And so, but there is a, probably a parcel by parcel assessment as we overlay the zoning, because there's more to concern yourself with than there was whenever you created the land use districts. We have to make sure that we're consistent with the land uses that are on the map, which may be easy, and it may not. And we also have to make sure that we don't infringe upon people's property rights, and that could be a little tricky. And then we're going to also have to look at the use tables. I think some of the trickier parts of that are, what do we, if we change the M or the heavy, light, and medium industrial to just two, what's heavy and what's light, and what happens to the uses that we really don't want to encourage in the city, the things that from the performance side create dust and vibration and a lot of noise, and how do we treat those and where are they allowed under what circumstance. We'd like to avoid court, obviously, if we can. We'd like to be able to finish here, but I think you may see more public involvement because we get closer to the ground and closer to people's property rights.
I mean, one of the things I think we expect out of this is sometimes if we do go to 12 to 15 and 7 categories, and some of it's going to be pretty broad, and there's going to be in the Woodfields area, if we change the R1 zone, you can have smaller lots in there. You're going to get pushback from that end versus the traditional land, well, we're not allowed to develop in our zoning category, or we'd be coming too dense. So those are the type of questions I think we're going to have to face, some of those, because they may be some significant. Maybe an 80-foot is going to be the new standard, or 75-foot is the new standard instead of 100.
And, again, the land use classification is intended to preserve the character of the neighborhood districts. And so, that we may have to come up with a more creative way to create the zoning in the neighborhoods and recognize lot widths and have averaging or you can have an 80-foot. If an 80-foot lot's characteristic in the area that you're in, then it's not a problem. But if everybody has 120-foot lots, it may not be appropriate. We're going to have to find a way to deal with that. But we have the inverse of that problem in other areas where we put the land or the zoning district in place that didn't allow 40-foot or 50-foot lots, but 40 or 50-foot lots were the norm throughout the area. And so I don't think that someone's development rights should be penalized because they only have a 40-foot lot and it wasn't a lot of record. If everyone else built on 40 feet, there should be because you can definitely build a house on a 40-foot lot that's the right size. It shouldn't impede you from building on that lot. It gets a little more complicated as we go through this stage, but it's a pretty, I think it's a, in terms of the workload, it's going to be relatively intense, and there may be times during the year where we're going to want to have extra meetings with this group, and we appreciate your input and
Would it be an accurate representation to say that, as a general rule, the direction that you're going with the broadened categories is what would give a developer more flexibility, where he might be able to have a use, there's more flexibility to have a use in a certain future land use and zoning. And then on the other side of the coin, there may be more restrictions on how that use is implemented. Possible. In other words, you can have this use without having to change the land use and zoning, but it means that you may need to develop it according to design guidelines.
You may. That's right. Generally, yes.
Specifically in the central core, when you state in here that buildings 1 to 8 stories, I mean, that's obviously a pretty big difference. How are you going to, or in what ways does the city plan to encourage, right, going up, like, let's say, Lincoln Mercury site or other sites that are near downtown, as opposed to people just going in and putting a bunch of single-story buildings? I mean, is there any plan in place for that?
Yeah, we would, yeah, but I don't, we don't have the specifics of the plan in place. It's a, you know, it's a, to me, it's a, there's going to have to be some kind of almost a market incentive because, you know, that something that, that's a monetary incentive to be able to go vertical at this point. And I'm not sure that, that's not typically something that we do. So.
But they will be minimum intensive.
And, well, you on that site, but
on a site that's designated.
I was more talking about commercial.
Commercial. You can have a minimum floor area ratio with some flexibility. We try to be a little bit more flexible than most.
I mean, I just I think that
DCA would have liked this.
Seeing as this is a future land use plan, I mean, and that there's been a great deal of thought put into what the vision of this area should look like. I would think that we, that if there was a way to,
and I think that
push.
I think that the way that we push is through the capital improvements that we identify. How do we get, as opposed to how do we incentivize? How do we get, just how do we get a developer to build a building on his own to three stories at a location like that? And some of it, I think, is provision for regional infrastructure, drainage especially, maybe some kind of regionalized parking that so that the person doesn't have to use parking, but it's obviously it's got to be usable by the end user at that location. You know, those are thoughts. We're going to have to develop incentive strategies, but I would think on sites that are key, like we did with the downtown plan, you know, it really was a set of policies that the city, or things that the city would give to the developer to allow them to develop, is I think really the way that it was intended in the first place. There's some participation, or there has been some participation by the city that really was intended to incentivize development of those areas, but still, the end of the day, it's going to be, can the does the market carry two or three stories, and what's the gap, and can we close the gap for the developer? And those may be, you know, it may come down to these are specific sites that we want to look at for more intense development as we go through the form-based code exercise, and,
well,
and that's how we approach it.
Making it easier for them to.
Yes. That's the intent, is to make it easier to go vertical in that area.
But, you know, I mean, one of the things we've seen with the old plan is that we did not, and that was part of this whole leadership exercise and vision, was that we wanted to become more intense, have more density and intensity. And we have not developed that. So it's going to be interesting to see as development does come back. Or are we going to go back to the suburban type development that typically have had? Everybody wants to park in front of their office and have low floor area ratios. So it's going to be a challenge a little bit on the other end. See if we can, if the plan does bring some of the more intensity that we're looking for.
When I look at the map, color map, and I like it. The orange sections, that's the medium intensity. Having lived in Orlando for 2.5 years, I'm somewhat picturing that as the city center that's outside of downtown, whether it be College Park, where there's a walkable about 4 block, Winter Park that has its own downtown area. Is that the vision for these medium intensity?
Yes, that's the vision. It's a scaled, it's a leveled down.
And then the follow-up to that would be, I'm seeing a number of those areas, well, at least one of those areas, and I can't really tell where it is on the map, that's close to downtown. Are we creating competition for downtown's core area that we want to try and redevelop?
That came up a lot in our conversations between staff and the consultant and the leadership group. Yeah, if we may be, but we drop the intensity off and the densities off in those areas. I don't know which specific area you're.
I'm at the north end, so we'd be out of
this one.
Yeah,
that one really was created during the West Ocala plan, as the Magna development came into a little more solid being, and you know, we looked at that plan with the leadership group or with the steering committee. Their vision was that 21st, I think that's 21st Street, and that would be a gateway into Magna, and that it would be a more urban setting. Now,
judging from the green, just to orient myself, that's Pine Oaks that's in green just above it.
Yeah, that's Pine Oaks.
Okay. And it'd be, yeah,
and I think that if
Martin Luther King running north and south there through it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Charcoal.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's, you know, we've been doing some work in that area on places like Phoenix Heights, which was the old Busby Quarters, and trying to bring, you know, what's the charcoal plant going to be? I'm not sure. There's a large vacant parcel at the corner there that has been any number of industrial type uses and recycling uses, but typically we think over the long term, over the life of this plan, that we're likely to see some kind of a transformation. We may see development there that's more consistent with neighborhood development. So this would be more of a neighborhood center. And again, you know, we have specific issues like in the West Ocala plan, the creation of the orange areas weren't necessarily, it wasn't meant to compete with the red area. 48% of the population doesn't have a car. So making things walkable, and using alternative transportation and providing services. We don't have grocery stores. We don't have banks in most of the West Ocala area. So creating a different set of incentives and making it more walkable and more accessible to transit services was really what we had in mind there.
Kind of satellite activity centers.
Yes, so to speak. But, you know, paying a lot of attention to how it's developed. More of a mixture of uses typically. Right. So we're not prohibiting residential. We're not necessarily in that, take that one for instance. That may be a number of different types of residential development, but what we'd be looking for, as we stated in here, in the new residential areas, I think in Objective 9, we'd be looking for more of at least some kind of a modified grid pattern. More of a historic, traditionally urban pattern and a walkable situation as opposed to swales and berms and streets that aren't walkable.
One question I have, I mean, obviously this code is a complete departure from what we had before. How are we really going to implement this from here on out, and kind of what are the steps you're going to take to implement it? And kind of one of the things that I was noticing, a lot of these things in the packet that we had, a lot of the streetscapes, you know, they're completely different for the most part from what we have right now. And a lot of things are kind of, you know, design based and things like that. So, you know, when we implement this, when people try to, you know, sell their property or redevelop their property, we're going to start kicking in some of these, you know, situations where they have to start putting in, you know, sidewalks and trees and different shrubs and this and that. And
or I mean, we may do it. You know, it's going to be multi-phased, I think. I know. But here's how I see it being implemented. And they may not agree with me, but I'll tell you how I see it being implemented.
You got the microphone, so.
I see it being implemented in that we come in, like I said, we change the zoning code, we change the zoning classifications, and we change the development regulations as they pertain to each individual zoning district. And I think it's really important, and something that we don't have is that, you know, we have the same thing in each one of those districts. It lays out the same. So there's a symmetry to all of the development regulations as we go through, and it's not like that right now. And so we have a map, a zoning map that's created similarly to this, less, whether it's 10, 15, 8 zoning classifications.
Can we get down to four?
I doubt that we can get, name that tune, huh? Now, as we create the zoning districts, and so then everything in the city has a conventional zoning district, so to speak, but there are a lot less of them, and they have a regulation on them. And then we already know three of the areas that we're going to do the form-based codes in.
At least two.
To the core,
right.
The core area, and West Ocala. At least a portion of West Ocala, Krosky.
It may be a different one based on.
It's most likely to be here, which is MLK and State Road 40. Those would be the first two, but the intent, as is stated in the element, is that we continue with form-based codes for specific areas, like especially the orange areas. We're not likely to have form-based codes in yellow or blue, but I would think in some cases we may in neighborhoods. But again, most of those are developed. Some of them are developed out. One of the things we're going to have to do is look at how built out the neighborhood is and address the lot width, lot size issue, and are, say, attached single family, is that compatible with the district? Maybe. It may not be. So we're going to have to make provision for that and for new development. And then on the corridors, some of the things that need to happen in the corridors to make it more aesthetically pleasing and to make it more urban and functionally urban, are some are in the public realm and some are in the private realm. It's more difficult to implement things in the private realm because now I'm telling you that you have to do something. And I may be telling you they have to do it when you develop or redevelop, and I may be telling you they have to amortize, for instance, a sign and do it now. That's not what we typically do. We haven't done that very often, but it could be. Again, they've been prioritized. We've already begun to explore and work on State Road 40, really from the interstate to 25th, but more specifically the area from Pine to 8th Avenue, and to treat that more urban, in a more urban manner, wider sidewalks, narrower lanes. Some of that may happen in short term, some may take longer. And on 441, the whole six-lane section. And again, it may happen in pieces, but there may be, again, it goes back to, I think, at least the thread of what Phil said. There, you may get more development rights, but you may have to do certain things along, say, Pine.
Right.
You may have to develop in a certain pattern to be able to get to the density that we want you to get to. But you may have more development rights than you have now.
One thing, just kind of a side issue of what Augie was saying, talking about landscaping. Something that needs to be looked at, it's kind of a side issue, and I won't get into the whole thing tonight, but the tree code has got to be revised. It's really based on previous knowledge, previous understanding, and did a good job, but basically the code itself doesn't fulfill the intent of the code. The intent is good. The code that tries to accomplish it is way outdated, and but I'll talk probably about that more in future meetings.
Yeah.
Pete, two questions. First, I apologize for getting here late, so if you've covered this already, but the first was probably, have you established units per acre that you're thinking about in each of these?
Yeah, we have. It's in the land use, it's in the element. In the central core, it is 12 to 60.
Okay.
In the medium, it is 5 to 30. In the low, which is the yellow, is 3 to 18. In the neighborhood, it is 5 to 12. Yeah, up to 5, up to 12.
Okay, well, I'll get a copy of that.
It's a summary on page 14.
And the other, and this may be Ty brought it up when he was talking about higher intensity, you know, trying to get higher intensity and development, especially in downtown. There are limitations in the code right now that just limits you to what you can do because you got to have parking, you know, you got to have so much parking, you got to have the drainage retention. I mean, is the city going to take a look at how they can mitigate those kind of things?
We're going to have to.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
You know, if you're going to still require on-site retention for every site, you'll never get your
No,
your
we recognize.
Area.
We can't do
right.
that. We have got to.
Is that going to be part of what we're looking at, or is this going to be
I think
down
it,
the road?
No, somewhere? As we get into this, I think that we will. It's on the radar. It's where do we accommodate drainage? What are the possibilities? We recognize that it's a restricting and it's going to restrain what you can do. You've got to have it. And the parking, I mean, we do have parking exempt zones. I think we'll look at those and we'll have to address them as we go through
the
area plans.
You know, the problem that we got now is, I mean, people still need to park somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so even though you're in the parking exempt, whoever develops a piece of property, they still have to have parking somewhere. So it's almost like we've got to come up with, and I know the city's taking a big step with the parking garage that they've agreed to. But if that's what we're really interested in, we're going to have to, we're going to have to step up with some infrastructure on our part.
We're going to have some kind of regional drainage accommodation. We have some capacity for some areas. We've been looking at it and on other projects we've been working on, like in North Magnolia, do we have accommodations in every basin? And so we've been looking basin by basin and seeing, well, if we don't have it in a certain area, what do we have to do to accommodate it, which is step one, to understand what we have and can we, if I want to have a floor area ratio of 1, what do I have to do on this site? Or not a floor area ratio, but just a lot coverage of 100%.
Yeah.
We previously talked about the idea of the city-owned lot being green on that map. How long do I have to change it from red to green on that map?
The city-owned, which?
The parking lot behind Concord Square.
This map's not adopted. The land use map's not adopted. The changing the city owned lot to reflect being public space.
We updated that for some size thresholds. That there's we don't do that before recognizing the city owned properties and showing them through the just more clearly delineating them. But then again, there was a program where the size space kept the imagery on the map where it didn't show, but just because it's not specifically shown doesn't mean the use underneath that is anticipated to change.
The idea is the lot I'm talking about is the one that's been talked about in a land swap with Mr. Murphy if you put the parking garage there. And the DBA board has talked with some of the owners around that area about if that's a public area where we could have a Ferris wheel and ice skating and those types of things downtown once the chamber lot goes away, would that be something you'd be interested in? And the idea is that just by simply having that as a public area, it spurs development. But my concern was if we adopt that map, I understand it to be difficult to change these classifications once they're in, correct?
There's going to be some process.
Yeah.
It won't be impossible. should be easier than it used to be.
Okay.
We'll see when we...
That's my thought, too.
Well, I mean, isn't the idea...
Yeah, you might not have to separate that out, but if that's a part of high intensity, then...
Well, yeah.
I mean, isn't the plan to not just to be a public parking space? It's, I mean, there's other uses that are supposed to be in conjunction with that, isn't that the idea?
Yes, and but the lot that Mr. Schott's talking about...
The north or the west?
The north.
North.
The one that's got the old Ocala National Bank building on one side, Harris Cluster on the other side, and the title company behind it.
That's currently city-owned, so we'll go back and look at that.
Getting back to kind of like the design guidelines kind of stuff, how specific are we going to be on that sort of thing? I mean, we're going to like really specify building materials, facade, you know, this and that, and if so, who's making those decisions?
I don't think that we will. I think that it'll be, again, this process will happen in two parts. The first step will be guidelines, and then the second will be regulating plans. Well, it'll actually be a third step. Yeah, there will be a third step. It'll be a regulating plan, and then the actual form-based code. Typically, we have not gotten into colors or styles here, and I would think that we wouldn't, unless it's a historic district. We do get into styles and materials. We may get into materials a little. I think that one of the things that we've looked at and we've tried to encourage people not to do in the last couple of years is not to build, for instance, metal buildings. We would like architecture that's going to stand the test of time and, right, and have a long-term value to the community. So limitedly, we may with materials, but, you know, it's not, we don't intend to become Coral Gables or the Style Police tomorrow. It's just that we would like lasting value.
So you're more concerned about, you know, maybe position of the building on the property, you know,
building disposition,
close to the
yes,
street, parking in the rear type of thing,
yes,
than you really are, whether it's brick or, you know, a warehouse-looking structure or something, you know, I mean.
Well, I mean, I think windows and openings are important. So some of the architectural elements may be included. We may get the material. We may just say you can't have a metal building at this location.
Well, kind of taking it one step further and getting back to what I kind of was trying to get at before a little bit, it's like, how are some of these things going to, I guess, be grandfathered in? You know, I mean, how is this going to affect an existing property owner right now?
The intent
if something completely changes from what he has now, how are we going to allow something like that to happen?
The intent is not to take anyone's development right or vested right or entitled right now away from them as we move forward. But the wrecking ball, if they come in and say, I'm going to tear this building down, I'm going to build something new, well, now they're going to adhere to the new code, whatever that code is.
Right.
And if it's,
but we're not talking about a new owner. We're talking about a...
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking about new structures. Okay. We're not typically... And we're talking about vacant parcels. Now, you know, if somebody comes in 2014, they don't have the development right that they had in 2011 necessarily. They may have more intensity density.
Right.
But design, they're likely to have more design requirements. Although, that being said, although it's B3, B3A, B3B, B3C, having read it, it actually is more urban than people think. It just doesn't necessarily encourage you to go up. You're limited in certain manners, but it is more urban than the suburban B2, B2A, B2B. We haven't seen many urban-type buildings built in the last...
Well, it also has to do with the code we're under right now with the parking requirements and the drainage requirements, too, like Andy was saying. I mean...
Yeah, it has...
I
What, the Market Drive Park?
Who's going to build a building if you don't have parking? Why would you, you know?
Right.
But do we need all that parking space?
Set a maximum as opposed to a minimum.
Which most probably would run into more problems because of,
yeah,
you know, the large big boxes.
The grocery stores.
Five car, you know, five to one ratios, and maybe we would need a three to one ratio.
Have y'all been to DCA with?
First feeler's gone out. They haven't made any formal comment. Someone, you talked to DCA? About the, yeah, no. Someone had a discussion. We'll see. I don't.
All they're doing to make sure it's consistent with state guidelines, I mean, and visual. As long as we have the vision in place and everything works, that's consistent.
I'd expect some comment on flexibility, but I don't think it'll be a hammer. I think it'll be a comment.
They had commented on, and that's why some of the downtown stuff was probably significant, it was, should have been, what the DCA comments on, make sure and stuff like that. And no longer need to justify needs.
Need is not going to come into play.
And this is not an entirely new concept in the state of Florida. I mean, they've seen this, something similar to this before in other areas of the state, right?
How's it going to affect like PUDs and stuff like that? I mean, they.
Rudiani's property, it's going to make them there. Did he turn around even?
No.
Yeah.
He was already gone.
But he looked back through the glass.
He did.
No, I mean, how's this going to affect like PUDs or DRIs or that kind of thing?
I don't, well, DRIs, they're gone.
Okay.
But.
Right, but I mean, is this going to totally change how they can be maybe redeveloped from here on out or something? Or, I mean.
It's something that we're going to have to look at, I think, as we move forward with the, like, with DRIs, the Paddock Park DRIs built out, it's gone. Heath Brook. And I mean, I think for Heath Brook to develop, it's probably not going to be all residential if it's going to develop in the next 10 years.
Well, that's kind of why I asked. I mean, because there are some things in there talking about, you know, redrawing, you know, lot sizes and things like that. I mean, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of these big developments that haven't been developed at all. I mean, so are you going to be able to go in there and change some of these things or no? How's it going to work with those?
I think we would recommend staff face the path of least resistance on those ordinances that have already been, that are already on the books right now.
Yeah, so the PUD, I think the PUD ordinances will stay because they are more prescriptive. They say lots will be this size, buildings will look like this. And so you get into, again, you get into a neighborhood where you say, well, now you're allowed to do something that is completely out of the concept. And that's probably, it may be appropriate, but it's not a fight that's worth fighting, I don't think.
Because we're already negotiated deals, they weren't by right now.
Yeah. So we'd probably keep those. And we're also, you know, people have been for years looking for expansion of the PUD ordinance. And I think that we're going to need to find a way to do, you know, you're going to have a land use blending overlay coming before you next month, right? Yeah. So, you know, we'll explain it, but it, you know, it gives you more ability to move some things around and make sure that they're with, you know, we still want to make sure that it's appropriate to put something somewhere, but gives you some ability to move things around. But I think we keep the PUDs. The DRIs will likely take care of themselves. And the land uses that the land use that we put on Heathbrook was low.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, where they had existing settlement.
What about properties that, you know, potentially might be annexed in the city? You know, how are you going to treat those as far as the, you know?
How do we say treat them?
Well, working with the county to come up with possibly a joint plan here, we have been able to discuss eventually our wastewater agreement, which is expiring in 2016, goes away. So that's one thing. We had to come up with a joint plan, kind of merge their new land use with ours so that we won't have to go through.
don't know if I may have been confused a little earlier, but we were talking about phasing in the form-based criteria, the model. I think we need to be careful. I was understanding you to say that we were going to be phasing it in kind of in neighborhood, in a neighborhood pattern where, you know, like with Kroski and with that area. But I think we need to be real careful in that respect so that we're not, you know, going in and just kind of spot zoning, and so that we're really defining it by classification and implementing it all at once throughout the, you know, throughout the city. Is that what we're, did I misunderstand
a little
bit? Well,
the form-based codes are, again, geographically specific. So again, it's prescriptive to the block, the lot and the block that you're on or in. So you pick the area and you say, we're gonna have a form-based code in this area. So in Kroski, we would say that this is how the buildings are built along the east, the west side of MLK. This is what the street looks like. This is what the sidewalks looks like. Here are the trees, here are the lights, and here are the lots, and this is where the building sits, and the parking's in the rear, and the buildings, they're consistent, or the use doesn't necessarily matter. It might be a house, it might be a business, but in character, it looks residential, but it could be either use. But we say it sits at the front of the lot, and you know, the parking's in the rear, and this is how the infrastructure's taken care of, or the rest of the infrastructure's taken care of. So there are a couple of ways to do it. I suppose reserve the area and say that this is going to have a form-based code, and in the best case scenario, the form-based code and the conventional code would be done simultaneously, and so they would just go in right at the front. My concern is that if we don't have the form-based codes complete for the areas that we want to put them in the first phase, that you have to have some kind of a zone to make an accommodation for people who do want to develop in the interim. And so we'd have a conventional zoning district until we put the form-based code in. The other thing is, as we go through the community plans, the areas that may get form-based codes will be identified through that process. And so there will be, I would think that the process would be that it would come to P&Z and that it would go to City Council for review and to be adopted. And that's the process that it would go through. And there will be, you know, debate about whether it should be there or not, and what the area should look like.
I think with spot zoning, usually you're dealing with a single property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Standard. And in this case, and as the board knows, you know, we worked with the West Ocala community for a year, 12 months, and we had many different meetings, and the community told us, you know, we'd like to see a different form of development in this general geographic area, which we believe to be the heart of our community. So that's why it's important for us to have a little bit of a higher standard there. So it's not really a, you know, a certain property owned by a specific person on the steering committee, but it's something that we would want to replicate in other areas of the city. I know Pete showed that area that had the 7 different community areas. So before you would go in and try to apply a form-based code, we have to understand what the people of that community rather than just saying, oh, here's your form-based code and it goes into effect tomorrow. That's not the way that the city wants to do it. It's work through the community and through the board here.
Else?
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Pete.
Anybody else want to add anything? Or?
Our next meeting.
I know Bill Ray wants to say something, don't you?
I'm
not. Okay.
Our next meeting is the 13th, which is we will have the Lugo case coming before you all, which is land use looking overlay, which is related to the ag, the site, and we'll explain why we're moving it at that meeting. We also were planning going over again in more with land use, possibly the recreation, which is just about gone, and the transportation element.
If you get.
We have a council workshop on the 28th of February, and
or we can come back and give you a report in March.
I don't know if we need to have a workshop on the...
My thinking is that we would take the land...
Nate wants a workshop.
Yeah, I'd love.
But we would take the comp plan on the 13th, and then we would come back for any final approval on March 12th, which is the next regular PNC meeting. Then we would move on to city council. One of our initial, Mike was initially thinking that we might need to have that workshop on the 27th, but I didn't...
What else is happening for the wayfinding that we could optionally go to?
Yeah, we're gonna have stakeholder meetings that, we're gonna have like leadership stakeholder meeting around 3:00. We'll probably have one around 6:00, and then the next day, we're gonna have one before the council workshop, and maybe some individual interviews if people weren't able to do something special, like for the downtown or something. So y'all can participate in that.
Are we doing anything to address access north of 40 before the wayfinding gets done? I hate for the wayfinding to get done and then find additional access to the north and have to go back and redo it.
Access?
As you come in...
Oh, I don't get...
40 east, you can't make a left into north downtown.
Right, I don't think there is anything. I mean, we're trying to hold off. I mean, the plan is that the wayfinding... Hopefully the plan will be improved by, it's not going to take that long to do that, and the brand, it's going to be new logo, new branding, and the wayfinding signage for the downtown, as well as the gateways and some of the parks throughout the city. So it's going to be a little bit two phase of it, but it should be finished around July. We're looking for the plan, and then we'll start implementing it. The downtown's going to be implemented first. I mean, that's where we're going to probably have some of the funding. That's our critical need is the parking, the downtown. Talking with the wayfinding consultant who was down here, I mean, one of the things he initially, when me and Pete took him out, was how poor our signage is. We don't direct anybody to anywhere. I mean, we have these wood signs every few places, but nothing really that identifies you to, you know, to certain landmarks or to the downtown. So it's significant. Some of the plans that they show for these cities like Sarasota and Savannah and Augusta and Miami Beach, they work on Daytona one right now. It really makes it significant.
It's pretty impressive, actually. And everybody struggles with branding. Everybody wants to brand their city, but it's a more organic way to brand because you develop this wayfinding package that is specific to your desire, how you want to characterize yourself, and they end up coming up with a brand. They did it in Dallas, they did it in Augusta, they did it in Miami.
So these first few meetings for the signage things, I mean, what's going to be discussed? I mean, what you want to target? I mean, you know, where you want to draw people to? You know, I mean, the type of font you want to use on the signs? I mean, like...
Get the input, and then come back and do some first draft of it, and then that, and then have a second round of it. And then hopefully the final plan will be like in July. But yeah, what we're looking at is a brand, a new logo. We were starting the process of doing a new logo at the local level, but we were kind of struggling to come up with something that kind of touched upon everything. So we want to just tie it all in. I mean, that we want kind of, you know, something significant. When you see it, you know that it's wayfinding, you know this is going to be in the downtown, you know this is related to parking, this is related to the gateways.
When you're talking about a logo, I mean, what are you talking about?
A city logo like that. I mean, that's one of the things.
You're talking about getting away from that?
Yeah, we're trying to update.
What's wrong with that?
We're trying to be a little bit more.
There's not a horse in it.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good logo. You see what the Miami Marlins did with that nightmare of a logo they have. I mean, just because it's new doesn't mean it's better.
And
be happy you're colorblind, doggy.
And that's
be happy you're colorblind.
Yeah, I didn't even know they had a new logo. There you go.
I mean, that's part of this process.
It's like a rainbow.
We want to get something that everybody feels good. Actually, this What they come up with is a whole brand. I mean, it's like a booklet of everything in terms of what your stationery would look like, what you would put on this, what you would put on that. I mean, there's a whole process. We didn't buy into that yet, but that's something some of the cities have done.
I'm interested to see what it looks like. But
just
back to what Ted was saying, though. I mean, I have thought about it, but seeing as his office is now down there.
I don't think we should say Miami Beach in our logo.
That the access to north downtown, that is a major problem.
And generally,
the whole north side of town is like the forgotten side of town. I mean, I would.
Well, and again, that's something for public input, and that's more of a planning exercise. And we've talked about changing the one-way pairs.
I mean, the north side and south side are treated very fairly if you look at that map as far as where development can occur and should occur. But I mean, I think anyone, if they drove through South Ocala versus North Ocala, you can tell a huge difference. And just like Ted said, access.
I mean, you know,
to Magnolia, you got to drive down two blocks to turn north and go back around.
There are a couple of reasons for that. Some of them are historic reasons. This was a small city. It was a very small town. So, I mean, if you talk to the older guys, they always say, well, you know, that was industrial. Historically, that was industrial. That's why Seminole feeds there. We had trust plants, and that's what was there. Now, you know, that's gone, but we have connection problems, and how do we solve the connection problem? Well, the first thing is, how do we treat 40? And then how do we treat the intersections and make the turning movements available for everyone? And what do we do with the streets? Do we make them two-way, or do we continue with the one-way pairs? There are geometry problems on each end, each terminus of that. So it becomes a problem that we have to look at the whole on, and we have to see how we can treat the intersections so we can make sure you can make a left-hand movement into the area north of the boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
We've played with that exercise some.
We've gotten specific direction from the leadership group to recognize, one, the whole vision is based upon connectivity issues north and south and east and west across Pine, north and south across 40. And with that said, the leadership group had said they specifically want us to start looking at, which would come into form base, which would come into code and the land development side of it, but also other recommendations of, you know, the one-way street pattern and how we get, you know, how do you get north of 40, and that comes in with the wayfinding where it's got to tie into this, is that if they decide that we need to build a pathway, you've got to have a plan and land development regulations that allow you to have the pathway, and, you know, at a destination and a beginning and an end. You can't just say, go that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of that too, though, I mean, like, you know, 40 is a state road highway and 441 is a U.S. highway. I mean, how much input do you need to work with them?
We're talking to them. We're actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically up to them whether or not we redevelop 40 in Pine, right?
Well, what we do with them, we think we can. We think there are some easy things that we can do on 40, and on Pine, they're going to participate in a study. It looks like they're going to fund the study of 441, I'm sorry.
Because both those are pretty, you know, significant barriers for, you know, pedestrian traffic one way or the other, especially Pine, obviously, you know, and those, you have some pictures in there on how you'd like to see it. I mean, is that realistic?
We took it to TPO. They got hung up on a little bit of kind of what I'd call the minutia of, we don't want on-street parking. We said, okay, we get that. It doesn't have to have on-street parking. We want it to be four lanes, and we want it to be urban in type. We think that going to four lanes, capacity is not an issue. It hasn't been an issue for 20 years. We're operating at about the top of a four lane. If you drive on the road, it's the capacity in the lanes as you go through, typically not an issue. What is an issue is operations at the intersections. If you go to four lanes, you probably have more room to accommodate the improvements that you need at the intersections. So that's what we hope for. And we'll do the study. We'll see what they come back with. I think they're DOT's concerned, they're going to have to say, yes, you can do it in the end. It is their road. 40, same thing. 40, the infrastructure issues add a lot of cost to doing exactly the right thing, to making the side. What really brings the two sides together on 40 is narrow the lanes, make the sidewalks wider, really wide, so, you know, and put the trees on the outside edge of the sidewalk in an urban form, not a suburban form. So a little tree well and a tree.
Right.
And bring the buildings, most of the buildings are already to the front.
Right.
Make sure that we drop the speed limits, we retime the lights so that you can't go 52 miles an hour from 8th Avenue to Pine, because you can now. And that makes it a little safer for the pedestrian. It makes it a lot safer for the pedestrian, and it makes it a more inviting pedestrian atmosphere. And then look at textural changes as you cross the street where the pedestrians cross. Some of those things, we're looking at some of those things now. It's important, again, that we stay consistent with the vision and the plan. I think those things are consistent with the vision and the plan, but, you know, it's hard to make the physical improvements, because to move curb and gutter, like to move the north curb and gutter to the south, that's a big expense. So that may be a little longer term before we get there. We have to study the changing the one-way pairs to two-way. It's weird because I thought that we'd get pushback on. There are certain things I thought we'd get pushback on. We didn't get any on, and that's one of them. I think that I was a little worried that people would say, we don't want that. But everyone's.
I don't want it.
You don't want it?
I just want, I mean.
Well, you want access into North Magnolia.
I do. North. Yeah, why can't you turn left? I just want to turn left. That's all I want. I like the one way, but I just want to turn left.
Okay. So you want it, but
you're
you
only
do.
Going one way.
You want it, you'd advocate for safety, though, right?
Huh?
You would advocate for safety. So you, we
I
would
do,
have to have
I like
storage.
Safety.
Yeah.
But I, and I like turning left, too. I don't know. You can turn left going the other way. Why can't you turn left going that way? Sure, there's a
and we can
yeah,
look
but
at
then,
that.
Then each turn lane would only be able to come at like two cars.
I don't know if it's a visibility
okay.
reason. Yeah, a lot. We have a lot of short.
If you're
stacking.
Slowing down traffic anyhow, what's a big deal? Just get rid of that whole center
long line turn
thing.
Left.
Yeah,
long line turn left.
Put a traffic circle.
Traffic circle.
That's where they can.
Here's something exciting to watch.
Oh, yeah, let's do this one.
We're not yet convinced.
What is this?
This is a place
some geometric shapes?
Yep.
Oh, I'd love to see some geometric shapes.
You want an Ocala coffee mug?
Yeah.
What's that?
An Ocala coffee mug?
Asheville has two logos. One's like that, and then they did a more formalized in areas in the downtown.
Yeah, there you go.
Something like that with the finials and the kinds of finials that they allow, and this kind of wayfinding signage. So, they're not all in here. Then in other areas they use the other form. It's actually up to Miami was just really kind of font-based and you know, two colors. They use the purple green and the brushed metal in most of it. Some blue on the wayfinding. Really, it was, he said that the thing was, look, we want to distinguish ourselves from Miami. We want it known for the beach. And so they bolded the font.
So they added beach to it.
Well, they folded the font. Well, it is actually, you know.
I can't tell a
brilliant,
difference.
Brilliant.
Well, you don't have it. There you go.
Let's get that.
Look, wait a second now. Wait a second.
Can we call it? Can we switch our name to Ocala Beach?
Oh, yeah, I see the difference.
Yeah, let's look. Come on.
They added five.
It's like the Hollywood sign.
Isn't that like the worst place to put a sign for people to read?
Yeah.
That's for the kids when you go by.
But you can't turn left.
No.
You'll end up in the water if you
Yeah,
do.
Let's just go with some guardrail.
Okay, yeah, we can put a guardrail in. 40.
Everyone's an art critic.
Man, I'm not big on a lot of change. I don't like change for the sake of change.
Well, it's going to be, but it's, again, it's going to be change. We're going, there's going to be a lot of buy-ins. It's going to be something that I think is a, it's a process in terms of how you arrive at it and make sure that it's the appropriate thing. It's not, here's what you're getting, like staff did it, and it's a cram down. It's meant so that people have the opportunity for input.
The branding and the logo thing kind of came second. I mean, what we were really pushing it from leadership and actually from council was they really wanted to see a wayfinding system. Everybody was complaining that it's hard to get around. There's not a lot of advertising.
It would be great when you put in the train station this way, something. Tell them clients to follow those.
You don't know where the civic theater is.
Detour.
Well, the biggest thing I think would be telling people where the parking is. Where the parking is, really. Where the lots are they can park, that kind of thing.
And to make it more uniform.
So it's not like Tampa or Lakeland where you're looking for a road sign and there are, you know, six or eight different entities that have their signs stacked up one in front of the other at an intersection. And
you can't find it.
You need to park to read them so you know where you're, you know, figure out where you're going.
What kind of direction are we going in with that? Do we have any kind of like a preliminary kind of stuff or?
No, I think it's a pretty, at the front end, it's relatively open. They come in and do interviews and I think that their process is to try to identify.
So we want to put our input on what we hope the signs are going to look like.
Yeah, well, and what you, what needs to be, what do we need to point out where it is? You know, do we need to say it's that way to the Appleton Museum and the Civic Theater to?
Well, unfortunately, like Phil said, you'd be coming down 441 at Social League Boulevard. I mean, what are you going to have, like a 20 different things? This way, that way, that way, that, they're all that way, you know what I mean? That.
Well, typically, you can, the font's big enough, and it's usually four or five things, everything left, yeah.
Well,
everything's
have,
left, but you can't turn left, you got to keep
we,
going.
Don't we already have brown signs?
We have brown signs in historic districts.
Don't they have something on them? They have like the thing on the square, the little, what's
the historic district logo, though. Yeah. There's a gazebo on it.
The gazebo? Don't they have like the gazebo?
Each one has a different
building on it.
Kind of different logo.
Yeah.
Historic district is a house. It's
yeah.
Pattern.
A haunted house.
I think what we're talking about is there'll be a sign saying the post office is this way, right?
Yeah.
Could be.
Parking is this way.
Yeah, parking.
Courthouse is back there.
Yeah.
And uniform parking in the downtown where the lots are, you know, make it easy to read. I mean,
right.
We have struggled. I mean, everybody, they say go get a sign. The DDC would tell us go get a sign. We put up another sign. It would look totally different from the other sign. You know, if people were so confused in terms of, does nothing look alike? I mean, you expect, when you go to places, you expect to see something familiar.
Right.
So if you see it once, you know that maybe it will have the same look to it. And we have done, really, you know, we just tell the public works or some department, go make a sign, and we make a sign.
Make sure you spell it right.
You know, don't even know that, but.
Well, branding can help.
Identifies house.
Identify an entity and make it seem more like a destination. I mean,
right.
You know, point out a destination, and so it's Target, a lot of other, you know, they put a lot of money into their.
And there's a thematic design that carries through. It doesn't mean that every part of the city is the same, but some thread of.
I mean, part of it is the downtown would have a different feel to it than something at the Gateway or some other, like if we're talking at the Crosby Center, the Crosby Commons, they would have a different feel than the downtown. But the downtown is going to have a little different feel to it.
Okay. Gonna get tell them where to go, even though they've got a Garmin and a smartphone on their dashboard in their pocket.
No, they constantly complain because Google Maps puts them in the wrong spot. They call us from the same address every time and say, "I got Google Maps to get me here." No, you didn't. Come on over.
Doing Zumba across the street or something?
Yeah, I'm assuming Google wants you to make a left there on First, but you know you can't make a left.
All right, so that wave Wayfinder thing is going to be, Wayfinder, Wayfarers. I was thinking Wayfarers. I know. Okay. So that's just going to be a voluntary thing if we want to go. We're not required to be there. Okay.
Are y'all going to send us something about that?
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
So we'll have the 13th and March the 12th is hopefully.
February 13th.
Last meeting on the land use.
We also have, but we'll have transportation and recreation. When's CIE, that'll follow.
Will we ever get one?
Okay.
We good? Okay. We're adjourned. You dragged it up for almost 2 hours.
I tried to read my packet next time.
What do you go, Rob Batson?
I know. No, that's not your fault. Our server, I'm getting emails like that were sent last Wednesday.
I don't know why Ted wants people to find this building. It's right there.
Figure out what I missed. Yeah, now I'm up and running.
Oh, you are.
What I end up telling them is you either have to go around the downtown.
Right.
So maybe if you want to send this in.
Okay, I'll resend it.
Or go down to Griner's, make a left, go one block, make a left, and then make a right.
See, that's why I don't want you to be able to turn left on First. I want you to have to go down to Griner's and take a left. So you can see all this. Hey, I didn't know.